That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Do you think it makes me happy to do this?
Yeah!
No, it doesn't. When a week goes by without you find yourself in some kind of trouble. Now, if you're doing this for attention, you have all that I can afford to give you. And you're wasting my time.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, and welcome to FilmSack, episode 471. I'm Scott Johnson, and we are mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. Joining me today, Brian, he's not my man, Dunaway.
But he is my man. Oh, hi.
Hi.
911, what is the nature of your emergency? Uh-huh. Right. Okay, sir, you do realize that sounds a bit racist. What does Jewish humor guy and Bruce Lee type even mean? Right. So what is your emergency? All right, you was walking your dog on the street outside of the Jewish humor guy's house, and you were nearly ran over by a Bruce Lee type guy when the bushes in a parked car split open and the duo suddenly came flying out in their death machine of a car, barely missing you and your dog. Oh my, that does sound terrifying. Did you confront them? You did? What happened? The Bruce Lee type one-inch punched your dog when it barked at him, and the Jewish humor guy dry-humped your unconscious dog's body before running away screaming, "Green horny?" Okay, wow. Hold on one second, I will patch you through to McGriff the crime canine, and he will come out with his giant cartoon dog head and flasher-type trench coat and resolve this cartoon-type problem you're having. Click! Take a bite out of crime!
Oh, man.
Definitely want to talk about that escape path.
Yeah.
With the split half
car. Talk about every bit of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The split car is my favorite thing in the whole movie. Also with us, Randy, his gun has two barrels. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. And good morning, everyone. What a fine crowd. Thank you for coming so early to the South Hollywood Best Western Limited today. You're all leaving with copies of my new book, Amateur Crime Fighting for Dummies. While this is not an officially licensed for dummies book yet, my partner and I think it will soon be. Actually, my partner disagrees with me and would like for me to state clearly that he ghost wrote the book. what does that even mean? Am I right? Ghost wrote. A ghost can't write. Anyway, with this book, you're going to learn our three rules for amateur crime fighters. Number one, have a lot of money. I mean, a lot. You should not try this if you have less than a couple million monies. You probably need more than a couple million. I don't know, actually. Number two, apparently, once you defeat the police one time, you never have to worry about them again. Mm-hmm. You can drive around in an incredibly noticeable car and no police whatsoever. Sweet. Number three, you do not need to have innate fighting skills or learned fighting skills, or you do not need to learn fighting skills. You don't have to learn anything, actually. I'm 21 years old, and I still don't know how to drive.
Nice.
Well done. Also with us, Brian Fartgas Gun Ibbot.
Oh.
Fartgas.
Okay, Mr. Rogan, we want to thank you for coming in on a Saturday to re-record your dialogue. You know, the scenes where the boom mic didn't pick things up or there was too much action or, oh, you're already familiar with ADR? You've done 20 movies prior to Green Hornet? Wow. Okay. What's that? Okay. No, I lost my place in my script. What's that? Because I was freaking acting like I was looking around in the studio and I lost my place.
Nice.
It'll happen.
Let's try that again. Right. What's that? No, James Franco only had the one scene and he came in and re-recorded earlier, so we sent him home. So if you're ready, we'll begin. Okay, in this first scene, you and Kato are being chased by Christoph Waltz. There's a lot of gunfire around you. You're scared. You're confused. Just give me some general dialogue, things you'd say, and we'll clip out what we need. Great, great. Oh, good energy. Okay, good job. In this next scene, you and Kato are fighting a group of drug-dealing thugs in an alley. You're scared. You're confused. Just give me some more general dialogue. Same energy. Excellent. Okay. All right, now it's a quiet scene with you and Cameron Diaz. You're attracted to her, but you're scared. You're confused. Just some general dialogue that we can play while she's talking. Mm-hmm. Okay, same energy? Okay, you don't want to tone it down at all? Maybe do that again? No? Okay. What's that? A break? Well, it's about 4:20, but we've only been at this for about three. Oh, there's James Franco.
Yeah. You got your cameo and your weed reference. Nicely done.
So you were about to say something, Randy? I was on a roll. I couldn't stop.
It was great. I just can't get over how when we first started doing FilmSack, we would talk about angry acting.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And now it's just like. That's like a baseline trope. It's yeah. baked into what we observe.
Yeah, everyone should just assume it's in there. And like, oh yeah, baked, nice. Everyone should just assume it's in there, and then maybe once in a while it'll be so good for audio, I may play a clip. But just assume there's angry acting because all these movies contain it. That's the truth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's all yelling. In there. Yeah, it's like it's like a Twinkie.
I almost want to credit Seth Rogen for having the ability to once in a movie. Stop angry acting for a scene, right? Like that's supposed to show character development or some sort of like realization.
Reflection.
Yeah. Right. And like he doesn't do it well, but he tries.
He does his best. He does his best.
No, I mean he has one level. Oh, what's this? Oh, you know, it's a coffee machine? Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, thanks.
He never actually did the laugh in this thing, which bummed me out a little bit. I was hoping for a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I was waiting for it. And I was like, oh man, that's one audio clip we're just not going to get.
Yeah, he creeped up. I got to give
at least credit to him. He's kind of like almost like an Adam Sandler kind of guy.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got his fans.
Yep.
And he does what he does and is always successful in that group.
Usually, yeah. I prefer him in the writer-producer role because I think he's done some pretty good work there. Like, I think Preacher is legit good, and that's this team of him and his buddy, was it something Goldberg? What's his name?
Evan Goldberg.
That's them doing production, you know, they're show running that thing and it's been successful. All season two, I guess, wasn't as good as one or three, but my point is like, it feels like they're a force to be reckoned with, you know, like they can make content and people go see it. But then when he's in it, it's just the same dude and it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like it's fine to be that same dude, but I actually think he had more range in Freaks and Geeks than he does in his movies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think maybe it's he is a big presence. I mean, when he's on screen, I guess his character requires that all attention be on him, and that's part of the stick.
Yeah.
And I think it's also that when you hire Seth Rogen to be in your movie, you want that Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
Who hires Seth Rogen to be in their movie?
James Franco.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a solid. I was just like, hey, dude, need you to do me a solid. And it's like, yeah, solid.
They swap money. Each other out. If they're not working together, they're putting each other in their projects, and it's kind of
right.
I mean, it's funny to see, but it just reminds me of like, oh, I don't know. What's another example of this in Hollywood? Friends put friends.
Christopher Guest and all of the typical Christopher Guest.
Oh, yeah, good point. It's like kind of like that, but I'm trying to think of like a pair where it's...
Tina Fey and Amy Poehler?
There you go.
Oh, that's very good. Good. Yeah, good example.
That'll work. I couldn't think of anybody.
David
else.
Spade and Chris Farley. Oh.
Why you make me sad on this? Could have been. Why you do that?
Could have been. Think about it. They got started in SNL and then did work together later. These two got started on Freaks and Geeks and did stuff later.
How about a lot closer to this kind of style is Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson.
There you go.
They're like...
Yeah,
or
Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, or Owen.
Owen Wilson, you know, and everyone.
That whole cluster is kind of like a pick any two, pick anyone from column A and pick anyone from column B.
Well, column A is Owen Wilson, and then column B is all his other names, and then you just mix up him together.
I really thought for a long time that we were going to get 20 movies out of Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, but I think Will Ferrell made enough money that he doesn't really care.
Well, he just did a new Netflix thing. What's that? It's a Eurovision.
Yeah, Eurovision. Yeah, which I'm kind of interested in seeing.
Yeah, I kind of want to see how they pull that off, if it's as ridiculous as it looks. But him and, what's her name? Rachel McAdams, I think.
Yeah.
And they're...
Yeah, his thing with Julie Louise Dreyfus, the remake of the Swedish film about the couple that's the kind of thing. On the verge of divorce, and they get trapped in a ski lot in a ski village.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is actually really, really funny, but dark, and a lot darker than you'd expect for a Will Ferrell thing.
I think that's why it reviewed poorly. But we haven't actually even mentioned that today's movie is The Green Hornet. Let's mention that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Green Hornet. Oh,
yeah. The 2011 the 2011 Green Hornet, if you hadn't figured it out by now, that's it. Starring Seth Rogen, Jay Chou, and Christoph Waltz. Yes, Randy.
I just want to get some levels from all of you on awareness of this. Like overall, like the overall franchise, which goes back 100 years, I got nothing. Like I come into this movie. I never saw this movie, and I never read any of the books, and I never heard any of the radio stories or anything. Like I've got nothing.
I have some experience with the radio stories and some. Experience with the Bruce Lee TV Bruce thing. Lee. Yeah, a little bit, but not a ton, because this stuff's it predates us by a heavy amount. And so it was all in happenstance. In fact, I think the most I really ever saw of it was probably a documentary about Bruce Lee combined with that movie about Bruce Lee that had Jason Scott Lee in it. What was that called? Something, Last the Dragon. Dragon. Last Dragon, that's
Last
it.
Last Dragon.
I had great music. Anyway, that sounded like Jurassic Park. I'll stop now. But anyway, the point is that I saw both of those things, and they dipped pretty heavy into it, and it was like, oh yeah, the Green Hornet, that's the thing. And so, but that's it. Like, it wasn't a part.
I'm pretty much on the same level as Scott. Most of us, you know, it's like doing a little bit of historical research on radio stuff and doing some old stuff with Bruce Lee. That's pretty much been my exposure as well.
I don't have a lot.
I've seen this film. I've seen this film, of course.
There's nothing
I
from
saw,
the.
Yeah, I saw
80s.
The movie as well.
Yeah,
not familiar at all with the radio stuff, and just loosely familiar with the history of it. But yeah.
So
I grew up only even considering Marvel to read. Like I absolutely did not look at anything other than Marvel books, and so I don't know what the other green thing is. The Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Thank you. No idea.
You mean the number one other rec? You know what you want to watch? More like this, the Green Lantern. Why? Because he's a superhero on green. Is that?
Yeah, you like the.
Is
green?
That was that the first thing that got recommended to you?
Yeah.
I'm just totally like I don't like what I know of DC is the big stuff,
right.
and then I'm below that, like as a kid, and I'm talking about like up until I got old enough to walk to the comic shop and buy my own stuff. I'm a little kid, and all I'm given is Marvel, and it's because of my brother. He's 10 years older than me. He's handing down books. He only reads Marvel books. I only see them, and so as a kid, I just like I couldn't have gotten a lot of love for this stuff, and I wish I had.
Yeah,
I really, really wish I had, because the Green Hornet, not this movie, but conceptually, is really interesting.
Yeah, and it is. And actually, if you go back and look at some of that stuff, the comics or whatever, it is interesting. It's got a really cool premise. And real quick, just to stave off some emails, the Bruce Lee thing is called Dragon, : the Bruce Lee story, not The Last Dragon.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it. I thought the same thing, and now we're good. We won't incur the wrath unless those people start tweeting before they finish the show. Sometimes that happens.
Which they will.
But anyway, like this is like a cool, noir, pulpy, kind of, I don't know, it's not quite Batman, but it's similar. Because dude's rich and has all this money. The Kato character is kind of fascinating. Like, there's a lot you could do with it. And that's what I wish this movie would have done. I wish the movie wouldn't have leaned so hard into the
comedy.
Seth Roganisms of it. And instead, less comedy, more take it seriously. There are moments of taking it seriously. And in those moments, I was like, boy, this could have been a really different movie if they had just focused.
Good news, Scott. The sequel never happened to this film. Thank you. Goodness.
Yeah.
But the reboot is slated. They're looking at it. So.
Ooh.
Oh, really?
Ooh, yeah. Interesting. Reboot. Deadline.com reports Paramount Pictures and Chairman Entertainment have acquired the rights to the Green Hornet and started preliminary work on developing a reboot with Gavin O'Connor. Ah, Gavin O'Connor will be making a movie, don't you know? It says attached to produce. So they're going to have Sean O'Keefe writing and Gavin directing. Let's see. January 2020, they gained the rights to Green Hornet. On April 16th, 2020, Hollywood Reporter announced that they have officially teamed with Universal Pictures for the reboot called Green Hornet and Kato.
So there are way, way, way too many TV series about semi-heroic crime fighters the last 20 years. Like, so many that I can't even begin to address them all. There's just a billion. However, I kind of want to see a TV series. And I mean like a serious TV series, like a yes. HBO series made for Green Hornet. Because again, they're just all of these aspects of this character that are admittedly proto Batman. I will grant that, but just interesting, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and right. The overall mythology, which I can kind of glean from this, I don't know if in the original series, and maybe somebody who listened to the radio show or the original TV series can speak to this, but was Kato, I mean, basically was Kato the one that did everything yes. in the old original series? Okay. So the Green Hornet really was just kind of this ineffectual, right. like, all right.
He's a rich guy, right? He's altruistic. Yeah. He's altruistic. He wants good things to happen, but he can't effectively do it without.
Gotcha. You
know, yeah. Kato's required. And to its credit, it feels like it was breaking ground at the time, because what it was saying was, well, all rich guys have a quote-unquote man, you know, that's just doing right. work for mm-hmm. him or whatever, and he's Asian, and so let's make this weird. But this is a case where the comic acknowledged frequently, is my memory. I've been a long time since I've picked one of these up, but pretty frequently was you know, he relied on Kato, and this movie did that too. It just did it in such a goofy way. I mean, Kato's the right. hero of this thing. Freaking Seth Rogen's useless.
Of course.
You know? And I mean, you could just be hammering down on the trope alert button right now, because it's like rich guy and the Asian thing. And the guy, you know, the Asian guy is really clever and inventive.
Sorry, I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, right. Like all of there's so many tropes in the construction in the first act that gets you to the meat of the film. Right. Yep. And it's almost to a point where you're like shaking your head at this movie going, really? They really didn't try to come up with anything new or interesting on those lines. Like, it's just trope, dad dies, trope, you
right,
know?
Right. And,
but, right. But then like, once you actually get past all of that, I started thinking, I kind of want more of it. Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah. Why do I want a TV series is what I'm saying. Why? Like, it's so tropey. But
I'd love a TV
about
series. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Like you said, as long as it's done earnestly and not as a parody. Because I feel like the film couldn't decide if it was parodying the whole Batman trope or if it was. That's why I asked if it was true to the original story. If Kato
not
really
entirely
did do everything.
Kato okay. was awesome, but it wasn't like Rogan plays him as a buffoon, and he wasn't like that.
Completely useless.
No.
Excuse my ignorance, and you guys can correct me, and any listeners can correct me as well. But I thought that the centerpiece of this film was to explore Seth Rogen's Jewish deprecation humor, mostly involving conflict between father and son. Was that not
well kind of
I mean. and then like this journey to become and understand his father?
Yeah, it's a maturity journey, which you could argue right. didn't really happen, but yes, that's what they're aiming for, sort of.
Yeah. And I don't think we even really got a fully definitive answer on, all right, was his dad a dick, or was his dad, you know, helpful, or was it, you know, right. did it help get him in the right direction, or did it hurt
right,
him?
Right. The fact that they restored his statue was a gesture that made me assume that in the end, his father
yeah.
made some decisions based on what he had to do.
Yeah. The idea in the end was, this is my takeaway, correct me if you think I'm wrong. The dad realized what he was doing was wrong. Turned right. on the district attorney, decided not to play ball, and then started collecting information to try to take everybody down, got too close to the flame, so Hellboy / Stranger Things guy killed him. And then
David Harper.
Yeah, David Harper. Yeah. And then Harbor, rather. And then that's so this is like he was trying to set the ship right Rogan figures that out and goes, oh, well, I'm going to finish my dad's legacy here in the last 10 minutes of the movie and then put the head back on. I mean, that's basically it.
Right.
Sure.
So
sure.
There was redemption, I guess. But again, it's just so bubbly and bumbly and like all this stuff about them going after Cameron Diaz, who is just playing a piece of furniture in this movie. Like, what are you even doing?
No kidding. Yeah. Just some sexually harassed furniture.
Yeah.
Is what she is.
That was her whole job. Her whole job in this movie was just to be sexually harassed by him and Kato. Multiple times.
Does Seth Rogen character ever play not horny? I mean, it seems like it's always
He and Evan Goldberg think that's really funny. Okay. Like they genuinely put that into everything they write. Like that there's this that because the character is supposed to be unaware of how cringy they are, right?
Yeah. Right.
And that I guess makes them laugh, but it like especially the last 9 years have really changed how you write that. And right. I mean, it was hard to look. Has 9 years passed this fast? Yes. And a lot has happened. Yeah. And now like looking at this, just like shaking my head.
Yeah. That stuff doesn't hold up. Does not hold up. And it bummed me out. Cause I just thought, oh, that's just too easy. Like what you're doing here is so freaking easy. Just like write more, do better writing.
Also,
this is bad.
Also, they had an opportunity because they established her as a brain, right?
Yeah.
She had a big brain, and they had an opportunity to make her a third in the scheme rather than spring it on her in literally the last scene.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah. I'm assuming that was what was planned for the sequel because we've already established through this film that Kato is entirely competent. And so we'd have to have Cameron Diaz's character in part two, you know, find her way.
Probably. One thing I did like about the movie that I thought was consistent was this idea that they wanted to be seen as a problem and never the heroes because heroes attract villains. So we want to, you know, we want to kind of sneak in when no one's watching sort of thing. And him shooting him or fake shooting him at the end. And that's how they explain the bullet wound he didn't want to take the bullet out of without a doctor's help or anesthetic. That stuff actually kind of worked for me. I kind of like the idea of your cover is don't go thinking they're heroes. They're bad. And then now we can move. I don't know. Weirdly, it gives them freedom. There's something about that.
There were a lot of bumblingness to an advantage.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of cool things like that. I spent the whole movie struggling with what's the superpower here? Why don't they accidentally inhale some green gas? And now they're good fighters. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like what? And in the end, I looked back on it and I'm like, oh, it was actually portraying Seth Rogen's character, at least as learning how to fight. He gets a little better every time. Yeah. And then in the end, he starts visualizing what's around.
Yeah.
But he's doing exactly what Kato has already been doing because Kato starts as a good fighter. And it's just like, I kind of want the green gas that gives him power.
I can understand that. But I think that would be, I think this was really trying to harken back to the 30s because our superheroes at that point, including Batman, you didn't have mutations that created superpowers. We weren't there yet.
Yeah, you were either from outer space or you were from here. That was it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you just had a particular set of skills and you did your things.
You're right.
Or something happened to you afterwards to give you those powers, but not you weren't born with them or anything.
No, they really approached that stuff more like in the 50s and 60s when we started messing around with, when we had a really good look at nuclear power and how it affects
human cells
and the environment. Yeah. And then we started applying those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. In this particular case, like Kato's abilities were clearly a little supernatural. Like him being able to see all the weapons and color them red and know that they're locked in on his little weird sight radar, and he can somehow move faster than all the slow motion people are moving. And, you know, he stood on that car hood.
Is this derivative of CSI where we kind of lock into things? Because they did this also with the Sherlock Holmes
movie.
And so
I'd love that superpower though when I'm like looking for my keys or
my God,
a certain cable. It's like, all right, do the USB that's like USB-C on one end and micro on the other.
When you need one specific thing and you turn down the baking aisle of the grocery store.
Right, yes.
Oh,
zooms in and calculates. In.
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah. I mean, he basically had a HUD, which made him way more than just
like
Kato.
Terminator,
the
maybe that's even further, even earlier.
Terminator HUD.
Yeah, it was a very Terminator HUD. So that's fine. It just it very gets close to this line of saying we're not, these aren't superheroes in the supernatural sense. These are just regular dudes, and one's a really good, you know, martial artist. But uh-huh. it really gets close to the line of they've got powers in their brain, right? Like, you just, yeah. if you're going to do it,
I
go all
Seth
in.
Seth Rogen likes to play with that idea is like LSD or some type of drug enhancement that enhances your mind, I think.
Yeah. Well,
right, but they didn't actually depict it. And I actually started wondering, did this film edit out a little shot of them, Seth Rogen discovering the secret green gas and inhaling it? You know what I mean? Like,
to finally get that power, right. like a training superpower montage.
Right. Yeah. This is PG. This is PG-13, so they may have been trying to stay in that. So you might be right; they might have cut a scene to keep it from R, because that kind of drug use might have triggered a rated R rating.
They really did steer hard away from seeing the results of shooting people, which I thought was very interesting. Yeah. Like they kept to the almost the PG side of PG-13. You know, like the first killings, Christoph Waltz shoots two or three henchmen that are all sitting around what's his name? And
what's his name?
James Franco.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember his name in the movie. It's crystal clear.
Yeah.
And
Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah. And you see Christoph Waltz pull out this ridiculous gun and shoot it, and then you see bullet holes in the wall
the pairs of bullet holes.
And it's like, oh right, this movie is not going to ever give you gratuitous violence.
Not really.
You
know what I mean? The worst one was the death of Terminator 2 kid.
Edward Furlong.
Yeah, when he died, at least had some blood on the wall from the two bullet holes. But other than that, you're right. They didn't get real violent. But then
Chili got smashed by a tractor.
Well, and that's the thing. The violence was all huge and implied. Like no gore, but it was like, oh my gosh, the tractor has mashed that person. Or Christoph Waltz got two leg chairs from or table legs jammed in his eyes. Geez,
jammed his eyes. Whatever. Oh god, I hate eye gouging porn.
Yeah.
Eye gore.
Gross.
Did you say eye gouging porn? Is that what you
said? Eye gouging porn. It's like it's like a hostile saw thing.
Yeah,
So anything with Ron Jeremy in it, then that's eye gouging porn.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, yeah, exactly. Right.
Got it. Anyway, sorry, Dunham.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ibbot. I was okay with the spikes to the eyes. That's not too bad. I do hate watching extended scenes of people like using their thumbs to dig deep into somebody's eyes. That's rough.
Totally,
I can't watch that.
It's got to stem from freaking Blade Runner when Roy Batty jams his fingers into Terrell's eyes.
When they do it in Game of Thrones, famously with the mountain, he's fighting what's his name, the viper
and the mountain, right?
Yeah, which if you think about it, he's really putting his eyes in the Mandalorian's face. But anyway, that is still seared into my head. It's so rough, dude.
It feels like one of the most vulnerable parts of your body, and it's like, oh no, don't. We have an agreement. We never violate that part of each other's body, no matter how bad the fight is.
Right. If you're gonna Daniel Craig me in the nuts for 20 minutes with bleeding eye Mads Mikkelsen, that's fine, because I know I'll recover from that. You gouge my eyes out, I'll never even see the nuts you've smashed. Like
nuts you've smashed.
Which
that's a book right there. I want to read.
I mean, the nut you smash.
Comic movies though care. Like a comic movie, if you make a sequel to this, you just have him he's blind, but he survived. And then you have a villain who's blind but gains some kind of powers in some other way, and you just carry on.
Yeah.
Like that's the beauty of stuff like this. I like that. It was hard to watch him take it in the face.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty cool homage to his gun, or like a kind of a cool reference to his gun with the two little splitty legs that shoot off. I thought the gun was pretty useless until you finally see like that those barrels can move.
Yeah.
Independently. That actually made it worse for me.
You think so?
The instant you see it, you know, oh, that's not an actual thing.
That won't work.
It's not That's not a working thing. It's practically impossible to make such a thing work.
Yeah.
The gun was plastic. It was made of plastic, right? Because they needed to be able to do muzzle flashes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And also because they needed little tiny Christoph Waltz to be able to swing this thing around.
Yeah, no kidding. Right. I love him, by the way. He makes everything better. As soon as he walks in the room, I go, all right, now we're going places. I really like that guy a lot.
Well, I mean, how many of those do we have in this film? Christoph Waltz, Edward James Olmos. David Harbour, Tom Wilkinson. I mean, we had a pretty good... there were a lot of Oscar winners.
Yeah, I would watch Tom Wilkinson eat a tub of, like, Miracle Whip. I love that guy so much. He's just great. It's awful specific. But anyway...
You need to see his film... see Valkyrie.
Yeah, Valkyrie, there you go.
So, Christoph Waltz, Chudnovsky, the character. I both loved and after the movie realized that the character is so disconnected from this film. And I think it's because they don't face off a lot. And what they do is just very briefly, because I had completely forgotten the character from the Green Hornet from previously watching it. And even when I was making my intro and notes afterwards, I was still disconnecting all of his scenes from the movie. It's like, I think it, you know, he does this amazing job, but for some reason it's just not memorable in this context of this film. What is that?
It's because they didn't let the character have a time to like develop and state his motivations and so on. So. He's like he literally sits quietly and meekly looks around while James Franco is abusing him. He does his greatest thing that this character does in the movie is spring this trap where Green Hornet gets kicked into a pit in the car. Amazing. Yeah. And Christoph Waltz has no lines that entire scene. You know, like he looks like a dummy driving a freaking cement truck.
You know what would have been? Yeah. You know who would have been better? Nicolas Cage.
Oh yeah,
he would have been better for that part.
Yeah.
And what a story this movie's production has that goes for like 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. Nicolas Cage was almost him according to the trivia. So that's what he's referring to. Here's what it says about that though. This is weird. Let's see if I can find it. Here it is. Nicolas Cage was initially cast as Chudnovsky, but dropped out, so he was in. He intended to play the role with a Jamaican accent, and Michelle Gondry was dismayed and would not allow it. And by the way, this is the Michelle Gondry that made like Spotless Mind
Sunshine of Spotless Mind and like five of my favorite music videos of all time.
Yeah,
this is such a disappointment because he's the only time you ever see anything that's at all Gondry like. Is in the initial fight scene when you're seeing like the multiple cars stretching out as Kato's running across them and the other stuff that kind of goes along with the visual, the visual things that Kato has.
Yeah, you're right. But, it's very not a movie for him. I don't know how he got roped into it or what the deal is, but.
I can't even begin to, like, we could spend the entire episode just talking about the 20 years of different people trying to make this movie. It's like they had George Clooney in the title role in 92. He dropped out. They put Greg Kinnear in there. He was going to be Green Hornet. At some point in the 90s, they had Jason Scott Lee signed on to be Kato. Oh. It just goes on and on and on. Like, seriously, there were 100 different people involved in this film at one point or another. And who cares? Like, I don't even care anymore. Like, seriously, like when you just look at it, it could have been anybody. When you read, seriously, anyone. Schwarzenegger could have been in this movie. Who cares?
Well, if he would have been in it, then we would have had
Mr. Freeze.
We would have had to do this.
Scrutiny.
We'd have to have some scrutiny. But Van Williams, who played the character, title character of Green Hornet in 66, this is like the most famous adaptation, the TV thing, was supposed to do a cameo and he refused. Says not interested. F off. Says Van Williams.
I wonder if that was before or after they said Seth Rogen was attached. I'm just curious.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't hate. I don't hate Seth Rogen. I don't always love everything he's doing. But I can't imagine Van Williams, who, let's see, he was born in 34. So what does that make him? He's like old. There's no way he
makes
even,
him old.
You think he even knows who Seth Rogen is? Seth
Rogen and that's a good question. I mean, it's funny, but maybe he just didn't want to do it. Maybe he just wasn't interested. Maybe there's no. I think we always want to find some kind of interesting anger.
I loved him in reason. That film about the Kim Jong Un.
That was good stuff.
Oh, I think.
Give me your favorite Seth Rogen. I want to hear your favorite Seth Rogen.
Hold on. He died in 2016 at age 82. Oh. And but did do a cameo as the director of Green Hornet in the 1993 film Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Okay, sorry. Your favorite, you say our favorite Seth
Rogen.
I want
to hear about your favorite Seth Rogen and not a movie where he is small time. So like not like Superbad or Donnie Darko or something, but like where he's a star. Give me your Seth Rogen.
Oh, jeez.
Knocked Up probably would be it. I'm just looking, list of like what else that I've seen that I like.
Knocked Up legitimately shocked me. I remember being shocked because they showed what looked like a fake vagina. Do you guys remember this? Mm-hmm. Like, so when she's giving birth, it starts crowning and there's like a full on like vagina thing, but it was clearly like a prosthetic. There was no way that was real. And I just, it just stayed with me. Like, I couldn't get it out of my head for years. I still can't. It's still weird to me.
Are you saying that they didn't impregnate Katherine Heigl just for that role, just for that shot?
I'm saying that it was definitely not her vagina, one way or the other.
It wasn't a human vagina.
No,
it was a vagina.
It looked like a rubber balloon thing with a slit in it. I mean, that's all sounds horrible, but it looked really bad. And I remember just thinking, I'm not watching this again.
Dunaway.
This is probably how I feel about Seth Rogen. He's not necessarily my cup of tea, so I don't usually seek out the films, but I do respect his ability to create comedy. And so I find that pleasant, and I can't say that any of his movies are my favorite. I mean, they all just kind of feel they kind of all feel the same to me.
Thanks for your commitment.
No disrespect to Seth Rogen. Because I think he is a great talent, and humor is subjective, right? And so
I never saw Pineapple Express. How's that?
So that's going to be my favorite of his movies. Okay. And it's because I don't know if I could love it as much now if I was seeing it for the first time, because there was so many unexpected moments in it. And that was like 12 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know anymore. Like what if all of these movies that have come since have done a lot of the same stuff, and now I'm just going to see it as feeling kind of derivative. Yeah. But at the time, that movie was so funny, and it's consistently funny. Like it keeps trying new things throughout the whole movie. And it has a fight scene near the end that is just like nothing I'd ever seen at the time. Now it's by the way, it's Seth Rogen fighting Gary Cole.
So is it a friend fight?
No. And that's another thing I want to talk about here. But
a friend fight in this movie, yeah.
But like it's so tropey. And like
Gary Cole, like you're gonna need to give me that stapler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that guy, dad in the Brady Bunch movie, Lundberg from The Office.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah. Love this guy.
He is.
Yeah, and I think you should watch Pineapple Express if you have any tendency at all for these kind of stoner comedies, because it's like I say, it's original. And that's the thing. Like now I look at everything, I'm like, but it's not that different from Superbad, is it? But again, it's in its time for me. Just like the best thing he did. And of course, like now that I think of it, I want to watch other Seth Rogen movies like 50-50. I've never seen 50-50.
Oh, I never saw that. Yeah. I heard that was good. It was nice. Yeah, well made.
It was a good sweet. I did see that one. It was a good sweet film. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah,
Levitt, a cancer patient.
He's got cancer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that was good. So I guess there's a lot good I haven't seen now that I think about it.
Probably. Yeah. So let's get back to the friend fight for a minute, because this is like one of the big check marks in this film. It may be in my top five elongated friend fights of all time that I love, because They Live is by far my favorite.
Oh,
okay.
But good one. this one's top five. This one's top five for a friend fight. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it went a little long.
That's what I liked about it. If you can manage to keep me entertained, during an extended friend fight.
That's what I was going to say. Didn't impressive. Go as long as the one in They Live.
No, they did not. And that was an amazing friend fight.
That's a good point. But okay, let me ask you this. Do you have to park your brain at the door when you realize, Kato could just murder him? And somehow his face is being mushed into the freaking foosball table like he's nothing. Like, that was so dumb.
The friend fight was actually pivotal for me to make sure that I believed that Seth Rogen's character was competent enough in a fight to actually be out there on the streets fighting crime. Because if he could at least use some kind of, you know, trickery or something to at least almost hold his own for at least a minute or two against our amazing fighter, then I'm like, okay, then maybe he could. Maybe it's believable.
So this reminded me of Galaxy Quest, where you have, you know what I'm saying, these actors who played badasses but are not actually badasses, and then they have to at some point become badasses to save their own lives.
Yeah.
Right. And I just like, I don't know why, but it always entertains me every time. The whole crouching tiger, hidden badass thing. Like, it just like it always entertains me. I love the idea that in this fight, Seth Rogen's character is learning how to fight and somehow making leaps and bounds.
Right.
I just chalk it up to Kato saying, well, if I use my even one tenth of my power, I'm going to kill this guy. So I'm just going to hold back. I'm going to let him feel like he's winning. And then I'm going to kind of put him in his place. And then I'm going to let him feel like he's winning a little bit. And
when Kato is gently slamming his head into the TV, you know,
it just
looks so funny.
That's kind of also the twist as well. You know, the one I always go to is The Simpsons, when Homer Simpson became a boxer. And the reason why he was good at it is because he could take a hit. He wasn't skilled at anything other than just being able to take a hit.
Yeah, there was some of that.
And there was nothing that that's maybe what this film needed for me, is there needed to be something besides the money that Seth Rogen had.
The money.
You know, something that his cushy life, his previous experience gave him an advantage in one area that would make it believable that he would do this, as opposed to just being rich.
Right. I thought about that too, and it has to do with the intro of the movie that kind of weakly does what we needed, which was to introduce the fact that this character has a heart of like a Rocky or something, that he's trying to right the wrongs, but his dad quenches, he puts out the fire in this kid's belly by telling him, don't even try.
Yeah.
And so he's like the real supervillain. Okay.
All right, you know what? I'll give you that, because it is the whole like some bullies were beating up on some kids, and I was trying to get All right,
so he has a huge heart and a really hard head, and is really horny, and that's kind of
okay, guys. What was your favorite improvised weapon in the whole movie?
Oh, the chair wheels from the office chair.
Oh yeah, that was really good. When Seth was wailing over,
because I really wanted to see him use it. The problem is that's when he got goofy and fell, and nothing happened with it. But I really wanted to see what that was going to get used for, and it didn't happen.
For me, it's when Britt slams Kato down on the freaking foosball table and then spins the levers.
Yeah,
spins the levers.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, the foosball table is good.
I hated that, but I liked it too at the same time.
I kind of did laugh about the TV smash faces. Like I said, their friend fight was full of just amazingly good. Improvised.
You can have that kind of friend fight when you got that kind of money, because you just replace all that shit, right? You know,
but you know, Kato's going to be the one who has to clean that up, because he's a servant.
That's like, right. That's right. He's making your coffee and cleaning up your fight. You're exactly right. Anyway, this movie also
kind of teaches you how to make that leaf in the top of your the foam. And
it does. I've never actually. I don't pay attention to like cooking shows or things where they show this, so I've never really seen it done until this movie. Green Hornet showed me.
Oh, that's how you do it.
Because at first I thought, it looks like a peacock or like an explosion. And then he went down the middle, and I went, you do the stem after. Okay. All right.
This is a great moment to talk about Jay Chou. So Jay Chou was unknown to the filmmakers when they gave him the role. He auditioned remotely, and they gave him the role. They flew him over to be in this movie. And then when he showed up to start filming, they found out in Taiwan he was probably the most famous singer at the time.
Yeah. Right. Even his, like, so if you hover or if you go to his Wikipedia page, that's the shot. I mean, it looks like he's boy band lead singer. He's the Justin right. Timberlake of Taiwan, basically.
Yeah. And, I mean, Taiwan is just a little island, but the guy is famous
over there
in Taiwan. Oh,
yeah. Huge over there. Yeah.
Like, this guy does not buy his own meals in Taiwan. And so there's just like something, I don't know, there's just something bizarre about him being the sidekick, about him being constantly put upon, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just constantly. Like,
when he's the arguably the bigger star per capita. Like, he's just like,
yeah.
The,
for sure.
Yeah.
For right. sure.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. He's in a ton of Hong Kong stuff, bunch of Jet Li things. Jet Li was supposed to be up for this role at one point. So it's funny to see somebody who's not really his protege,
oh,
but
wow.
you know,
right.
appear.
Yeah, he bought too much for this.
Yeah,
he's rich. He bought an esports league, a League of Legends team, mm-hmm. A few years ago. He renamed it J Gaming because his first name is Jay.
Nice, like nice. That's what you want. Hey, does anyone know if the whole Kato thing that happens in the Pink Panther is ripped off from this idea? Because it's another my man Kato who takes care of all these things, and then when I come home, he beats the shit out of me. Because I wonder if it's sense. All
yeah,
taken from that.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Because the character's name is Kato in that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just with a C. I think it's with a C, but still, like, it's almost the exact same idea, except he doesn't really roll around with the Pink Panther or around.
Wow, one, how did we not hit the Pink Panther? That was some. I guess because it's comedy, mm-hmm. right?
It's, yeah, itself it's similar.
It's hard to do comedy. Although, parody. If we're going to do any of them, it's the one we've got to do the one with Ted Wass from Blossom and Soap, where he goes
return?
Out to find Peter Sellers, who's disappeared.
Right. Not Return.
I thought she was.
What was that called? Right. That was
going to say Steve Martin.
That was
looking
terrible.
For the Pink Panther, or the Finding the Pink Panther, or
that was a shit movie.
Search for the Pink Panther.
That was an embarrassingly bad film. I remember thinking
it really was, yeah.
Like, freaking Peter Sellers doesn't want to do these anymore, huh? But still want to squeeze a few pennies out. All right,
Trail. Maybe it's Trail of the Pink Panther. Let's see here.
It feels like Film Sack to me for us to watch the 1963 like classic, you know, David Niven,
right.
Pink Panther.
I mean, the comedy is so different than the comedy we experience now. It is almost.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I love that stuff growing up. We watched them on VHS over and over and over. Return is my favorite. Like, we used to think those were the greatest things ever made. I don't know how they hold up now. They're probably not as good as I think they are.
I don't remember it. I know I've seen a movie called The Pink Panther Strikes Again. I saw it as a kid. Mm-hmm. I don't remember it at all.
It was total drive-in movie stuff for me. I remember seeing those with my mom and my uncle all the time. Like, they were... We would go see these things, and I'd remember bits and pieces of it. And I loved the slapstick apparently at the time, which is kind of funny because I kind of hate slapstick now.
Yeah, maybe this is why they overdid it too much.
Maybe that's it. I mean, it's
the whole selling point was me. I was always the introduction where they actually had the Pink Panther cartoon,
the actual Pink Panther cartoon. There was something to that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that seem like they're not endemic to the movie, Edward James Olmos is in this thing. And my gosh, is he in a different movie in every scene than everyone else is in. He's in his whole other movie.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he's in a movie about a newspaper struggling to keep up with the the state of things in the cities and or whatever. Like every time I'd see him, I'd go, oh, right, Edward James Olmos is still in this movie somehow and is in it at all. I don't know who someone owed someone a favor. Like, why do you even do this movie? You know,
and it's kind of funny to think, wow, all right, were newspapers doing this well in 2011? I don't think they were because I'd already left
This is right before the fall. They started. Okay. They started plummeting in the next year, like during that presidential election, is when newspapers really started closing up.
Yeah,
I will say this though. I've been to obviously been to several papers in my career, my storied career. The Seattle Times Post Intelligencer, I got to go in the basement and see their whole setup and those little robot independent little machines that push around the giant rolls of paper. Completely and totally a thing. And they just run autonomously all night long, moving paper to the presses that, you know, running out. That was kind of cool
too.
To see.
It is just the wildest thing. I've never seen one this big. I've seen some smaller ones, but that is just some amazing weird tech. This shows you how much money was in newspapers.
right
in the day.
Yeah, because you always think, oh, well, it was like 25 cents. How could they make money? Mm-hmm. No, they sold advertising space. They were like during their heyday, newspapers made a killing.
Yeah, yeah. This made it look like, okay, so this is 2011. Newspapers are kind of already on the ropes by this point. And they played it, though, like this was, you know, one of those 70s movies about newspapers where it's just like All the President's Men or something where people are just rushing around. There's Everybody's working. We got nothing but full employment. Right. Everybody's making a story. Right. What's the story today, everybody? What's the story?
Get that story on my desk by noon.
Yeah. And it kind of rang all hollow to me. I was just like, no, wait, 2011. You all got flat screens. I remember 2011. I had Nerdtacular that year. Come on now. But they
do try and like modernize a little bit. All right, well, we can't get this in the newspaper. Let's just get it in the blog.
Yeah, get it into the blog. They kept using that. If you go watch early aughts or mid-aughts to high-aughts movies, a lot of blog term in movies.
Yeah, we didn't even know what blogs were. It's like, I got to have a blog. Okay, why is that?
Yeah.
I don't know, but we just got to mention the word blog. Fit it somehow into the script, please.
Podcast hasn't had to deal with that as bad. There's still some of that, though. It's like, hey, start a podcast. And you hear that sometimes in a movie.
There's a lot of comedy in TV series about people starting podcasts.
Yeah.
Not movies.
No. Yeah. But the blog thing is, I think, is pretty, it has a unique sort of like, I don't know. Everybody thought that was the internet. The new internet was going to be blogging. That was the internet.
Right.
Uh-huh. And then not really. It's just web pages, turns out. You know, like you can, a person can write a thing and put it on the internet. It is, you don't have to call it a blog. You can call it their webpage or their, I don't know. I guess you can call it their blog. You do what you got to do is what I'm saying.
I do kind of like that this movie was written and produced right before all movies had to account for smartphones and YouTube and so on.
Yeah.
Like it was cool that way. Yeah. I appreciate it. It felt kind of timeless.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But like I joked at the beginning, it's really unaware of how the world works, this movie. Like the cops would just be ever increasing all over you all the time. Every scene, there would be more and more cops prowling around trying to stop this craziness. And they would key in on who was doing it very quickly. You wouldn't get to just go home like this.
Mm-hmm. Also, what do you mean I sound like Britt Reed? No, I'm the Green Hornet. What are you talking about? Also, no, what do you mean I smell like pot? Lots of superheroes smell like pot.
Yeah, all of them do. Damn it. When he shot that camera that supposedly took a shot of him while they were driving, and he shot it with a little missile, I thought to myself, no, they don't keep the... There's no tape there.
It's not stored in a little USB drive.
There's no like micro...
Somebody has to climb up there daily to find all of the people.
Yeah, who's got to climb up and get all the micro SDs this week? Like, come on.
Don't let Seth Rogen do it. He'll take a sushi drive up there and mess it all up.
All I could think of was, no, you're too late, dude. Blow that camera up before you got there because it's done.
Right.
Yeah. It's on a hard drive somewhere in 2011 even. So that's how it was. I like this bit of trivia because I always like crossover stuff. Hell, it's why we have a Trek connection in the show. But Tom Wilkinson is in both this and The Lone Ranger in 2013, a real hot steaming pile of garbage. But here's what's funny. The Green Hornet and The Lone Ranger are related in the original radio version of the story of The Green Hornet. So those two are relatives.
Like cousins. Okay, familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't that weird? It's weird.
That is weird.
Yeah. I don't know if I think he was like, not he's a descendant because the Lone Ranger is set in the 1800s.
Yeah, I'm going to say it had to be like that.
Yeah,
right?
Green Hornet's like the
30s. It'd be great if they were like, you know.
It was the year 1900.
I want to get the Green Hornet Cinematic Universe, the GHCU.
Yep. Now, my favorite trivia by far is a single line of text. It's only 6 words long. It says, Kato cannot swim in the movie. Why is that in the trivia? Why is that in there?
That's not trivia. Really, that's in the movie.
Plot. Yeah, it's in plot, the movie. Yeah. It's like saying Seth Rogen plays the lead character. No, we know.
Trivia.
The Green Hornet wears a mask.
That's really stupid. Anyway, but that made me laugh.
We got to talk about it because we talked about talking about it. Now we got to talk about it or else we didn't talk about it about it. But the escape path, the Batcave entrance with the split car. Yeah. Getting in and out of the in and out of the Green Hornet lair.
Yeah. The Hornet cave, yeah.
So Kato had to go and like install all that stuff. Right. And that could have been like an overnight.
Yeah. And that so was there's the thing It hung up. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
It's a paradox. It's a paradox. If you live in a world where there are people, they're going to see you create it. If you don't live in a world where people are out walking their dogs in your nice Beverly Hills neighborhood all the time, then you don't need it. You don't need that secret.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I wasn't the only one that noticed it, because it just usually I try to make an intro something that just it won't reconcile in my head.
There's a very small sort of immature part of me that loves the idea that there's a car you break in half to open a gate.
Absolutely.
But all of my adulthood has told me that none of this works right. You can't line it up either way. It's going to look weird, even if someone walked past it. Forget about not seeing you build it.
You're going to ticket that car, or you're going to call the parking. It's like, there's a car that's been parked on the side of the road here. Yeah. There's a weird seam down the middle of it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's a bomb.
And I'm sure that was also super entertaining to see like 50, 70 years ago.
Yeah,
but wouldn't it be so much cooler if you had the wherewithal to make a hidden underpass with like a trap door that opens up and the car comes out a ramp and then the trap door closes and it's in the middle of the street?
Sure.
I mean, if it's got to be disguised by a car, because I could understand that you don't want the best reason for that, and maybe even for that underpass idea, Randy, is that you just don't want somebody to park there and all of a sudden you're trapped in your Green Hornet lair.
Yeah, right.
So, but leave the car there, but instead of making it split in half, just have it like raise up, like that and the gate raise up. It's attached to the front of the gate.
Yeah.
You drive underneath it and it closes back down. Solid car, one piece.
Yeah. Or just have the ground move so it's an actual car so that if you need to move it, there's no questions. You just go move it. You know, the cop goes, hey, you can't park there all this time. Oh, all right. Well, I'll move it out of the way. Then you're not, because if you try to do it here, they're like, okay, you can leave now while I go move this car. No, we need to see you do it, sir. Well, okay. I can't find my key. Like,
how did this happen? Why is it split in half?
Oh, man, what have I done? And then run. Now, like, what are you going to do? There's no good answer. It's bad.
No. It's definitely an homage to those 70s type of
Batcave
setups, right?
You know, it's the big rock wall in front of the Batcave sliding open.
Yeah. But
they didn't update the idea at all. They just ripped it straight from the headlines.
Right.
You know, it reminded me of this is my own personal opinion, okay? I think that we live in a time where we should just have way less paper, because what's the point? There's just not a lot of point to it. I've got every once in a while, I walk into like a, I'm not asking them to go bankrupt, but I'll walk into a Barnes & Noble back in the before times, and I would take my phone in there, and I'd look at my phone, and I'd look at Barnes & Noble, and I would see a multi-acre, you know, multi-floor place just stocked with books and books and books and books, plus other kinds of media in there, plus a coffee shop. And I would look at my phone and go, everything but the coffee shop would fit on my phone. All of it. Every single shelf, every single book, multiple editions, plus some.
You're so busy trying to put it on your phone, never thought if you should.
I see what you're saying. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I always see that and it just goes, I know there's value in books, and I, you know, once in a while I'll get a book.
There's nothing like being like actually holding a book and
Right. There's something to it. I totally get it. But seeing that and realizing where we are technologically is kind of frustrating, because all printed paper is the technology of its time. I mean, that's all that is. Mm-hmm. So we kind of moved on from it. So when they're running around in that giant newspaper printing part of the facility, I used we lived near one here, and I used to tour it when we were in high school for our school newspaper. We just go tour it and watch them set type and all that. And seeing all those rolls of paper where the fight began.
You got to say
it's
paper.
Oh, man. It's depressing. Like, that's so much paper. Yeah.
It's depressing because of the resources used? Or
it's just a waste.
Here's an interesting trip. Go find out what the true footprint of running servers and managing data.
No. I agree.
And the resources.
You're right. All that stuff.
Have we really moved forward?
No. We may have even moved backwards a little, because you could argue that as much server stuff we use for everything that we're serving to each other, just running Netflix and billions of homes alone, it's probably way more draining on resources than the forest of trees it took to make all that paper. I just think, purely from those trees can probably still be up sort of idea. That's where I'm coming from. Because you're not wrong.
Yeah. Okay. You're a tree hugger. No, you're literally a tree hugger.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay.
Kind of what I'm saying is I'm not like some
right
crazy fringy sort of save the planet kind of brain, because I know it's complicated, but it just is so much paper when I know what in my pocket.
I know what you mean, but I'm trying. I know exactly what you mean, because we were whether or not is a true reflection of our true beliefs or not, it's hard to say, because we were of a generation that was inundated with this idea of we've got to save the forest, right? So, I mean, how much of it is truth and how much of it is just our...
Well, I have no idea, but here's all I know. Because to me, this is just, right. This is just purely, this isn't even about that for me. This is me looking at my phone and going, my clipboard, my temporary clipboard where I copy things to it and paste it and text and things, I could hold that entire day's edition of the paper in this movie in the clipboard temporarily. I could put it in there and then just transfer it somewhere and paste it. I don't even have to store it.
You could, but I think there's copyrights against that, so don't do that.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, you just see the sheer amount and you realize, no, we've got a way, and it's on this one screen. This one screen holds all of it.
I'm giving you crap, Scott, but I agree with you. I have the same emotional response to.
We
I have the same emotional response
in airplanes.
To all that.
Why do we need cars?
Right. Well,
it's not that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know. It's pure. It's really 100% just this, because I just, and part of it is because I have transitioned to such a digital life. Like everything I get, I don't get discs. Yeah. I don't get CDs. I don't get even video. I can tell you the last time I had a physical video game. It's been years. Maybe a decade since I've done that. And
you licked a Switch chip. I saw it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. The Switch got me a couple times because they had a better deal. That's why.
It is interesting this movie would bring that up, because it was 2011. It was a transition time where we were, you know, are we finally in the digital age, or are we still analog? And
we're in both, and we still are.
Right, and we're still in both and still, yeah, still there.
I don't know. I'd love to see the math on, like, obviously running all the servers we run, everything else, all that stuff adds up, and you have to look at it in a much more abstract way. You can't just say,
right,
that piece of coal burned in that oven and that made this much wattage or whatever. But there's probably a way
paper
to do that
was
math.
Paper was a pretty easy quantifiable item, right? It's like, okay, it took this many trees. There you go. There's the math. That's how many trees had to die so you could read this little print.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas it's a little more complicated.
Yeah, because now it's all ones and zeros, and they're coming from all over the world, and you don't know how much, you know, that one text I got. What does that represent in a kilowatt hour? I don't know. I have no idea.
So speaking of costs in this tech.
Yeah.
Speaking of technology we don't understand, can I have a little Trump alert?
Yeah, you always have one. Here you go.
You got to imbue the car with magic, guys. The car has to have the magic. This movie and so many Green Hornet stories apparently feature 1965 Chrysler Crown Imperial Sedan. Yeah,
beautiful
and,
car.
And I went on a little deep dive here, because it's beautiful, it's wonderful, and it's magical. A magical car in this movie. And actually, when you look across all entertainment, there's not a lot of magical cars. It feels like there's a lot, but there's not. And this one's way up there. Like, I would put this in the top 10 list of greatest magical cars.
Here, let's do it. We got that one. We got the General Lee. I would put the car from Supernatural as a modern example.
There's like three different Batmobiles that belong.
Batmobile.
Kit right there.
Kit's in there. DeLorean's in there. Absolutely, DeLorean.
So let me tell you just a quick little bit of trivia. I find it fascinating. They built this thing 29 times to make this movie. There weren't necessarily 29 Chrysler Imperial Sedan cars like sitting around, but they built them up 29 times, and they ended the film with three that were workable, drivable, you know, like actually good cars.
Yeah.
And the best one of the what was it called in the movie? It's got a name.
Black Beauty.
So the best Black Beauty that the film producers had, they gave to like a radio station as a promo to give away. And so there was some kind of sweepstakes, and it was given to a rando who had the car for about 5 years and then sold the freaking Green Hornet Black Beauty car from the movie, because the dude needed money. Sold it in 2017 for $28,000.
That's all?
Wow. Still.
Wow. Yeah, can you believe, can you imagine?
Like this is like the Simpsons house over in Henderson, Nevada. that somebody won from a Frito-Lay contest, decided they didn't want to live in it because it looked like the Simpsons house, and they sold it and for like regular house prizes. And now somebody lives in there. They've repainted it. Nice. So it's only the shell of it, you know, is like
the, so the value shape. Of the, yeah, the value of the uniqueness of it was not as much value as the actual item itself.
These things didn't go to real, like true collectors. They went to somebody who thought it'd be cool and said, oh man, I really could use the cash.
And it also probably says that he didn't take care of it, because like in 2017, if you're trying to buy a good condition 1965 Chrysler Imperial, that's going to cost you a lot more than $28,000, but it's just, oh man, to just look at it. It's such a car.
And that's the thing, right? Let's say you win this radio station contest. You get the Black Beauty that they used in the film. Now all of a sudden, it's not like you can park it on the street. Now all of a sudden you need to like, all right, well, I've got to redo the garage, or I've got to put it someplace where it's safe and is kept clean. I've got to make sure to maintain this thing. I need to buy separate insurance on it because it's a collector's item and not just like a farmer's insurance drive it on the road kind of thing. You know, all of a sudden winning this great prize is a really expensive proposition.
Yeah. So one more little thing there. This is not related to the magical car trope. I just loved the whole thing where they just Seth Rogen takes a girl all the way around Jay Leno's garage.
I actually do call that the magical car. It's called the Seth Gets Laid magical car. Just the magic.
The magic is that Seth gets laid.
I hate speed up film though. Can't stand it. Annoys the hell out of me. Keystone Cops.
I thought it was a lot of flailing and like leg jerking around that I would actually like to see that in regular motion to see how dokey it looks.
Yeah, and I want audio from the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I generally hate sped up film, but the way they handle it here, it actually worked to try to tell what they were trying for the joke they were trying to tell. It worked. It was effective, and it went by quickly.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I thought it went too long. I was like, all right, how many cards are you going to lay on, dude?
My mouth was wide open because we're just slowly walking around Jay Leno's garage.
Had to be Ford, right.
There's a Ferrari. There's a GMC. Like it was just so amazing to see.
It was beautiful. I mean, every car in there was like, whoa.
If you like cars in movies, the IMCDB, Internet Movie Car Database.org. I usually check there whenever it's like really cool cars.
Internet Movie Car DB. No way this exists.
I put a link in the.
I've been looking at this website Discord. Almost every episode of FilmSack.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, this is great. I didn't know this existed. Look at this.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Green Hornet's even
on
here.
One of my favorite places to go.
Oh, this is the Green Hornet one. Sorry, I'm like, wait.
Oh Green Hornet's linked directly to the Green Hornet.
I really like this Green Hornet. It's like featured on the main page. Oh,
it is everything.
He just linked us right to the first page, the Green Hornet page.
Wow. There's also an Internet Movie Plane Database. Okay. And
everybody's got a gig.
The
man.
Internet never lets me down. Never lets me down. Amazing.
Yeah, and you can find out that the Kato's motorcycle was a 2010 Harley Davidson V-Rod, which it looked so big for him.
Yeah.
It looked like he could barely control it. It's so funny.
Oh my gosh, this is intense how deep this goes.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at Datsun B210s, which is an old shitty car my friend had in high school. There's miles of references to movies and TV.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
This is like the Trek nerd version of cars.
Yeah.
He's like, they're really into it. I want to know how many Pacers had been
in the show now. Like a, you need to add like a Lincoln connection.
Lincoln connection. No, it's funny because I got to give Daryl a little jab here. Sometimes this happens because he'll just miss here on the show. He'll listen to the show and he knows what he wants to do. It's like, oh, their next movie's this, so I'm going to go find all their Trek connections and send it to us. And we love it. It's an invaluable service. Yeah. This last time we get this full list of Green Lantern connections, and Brian's response was, "That's awesome. Now do Green Hornet." And then just left the email to him.
I decided I'm just going to try and be a total a-hole. Jokingly be an a-hole because I know he knows that I'm kidding.
Yeah, but it
just
was really funny.
Be a funny thing to like be. Great. Now do Green Hornet.
I was just really glad that as we're doing Green Hornet, and anybody who wants to watch the movie can go to Netflix and just search the word green, mm-hmm. and they're not going to accidentally find Green Lantern because it's not streaming.
Right. Mm. Yeah. A Green Lantern is, if it was, we'd do it, I think. I think that's on our list of.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
One of the greens we got to do. My favorite parody of a green hero, like Green Arrow, Green Lantern, whatever. Is The Simpsons did one about the Green Listener. Do you guys remember that once?
Oh, I think I do remember that one.
The comic book guy was they were having a hard time selling a whole bunch of comics. They bought way too many of them. One of them was like thousands of issues of something called the Green Listener. And it was just some dude in a chair looking all, you know, got a green outfit and a mask on, talking to somebody, just sitting there listening. It's so dumb, but it stuck with me. I loved it. Anyway, all right. Hey, clips. How about clips? Let's do some clips.
Yeah. Well, let's do some clips.
I agree. I got some here, and I'm going to play them. That's how this works. Hold on. There it is. All right. I didn't do too many, but enough to enjoy. Here's Christoph Waltz making things better.
The fact that you assume that you can open this establishment without my permission, without payment, and sell narcotics out of it is completely unacceptable.
Really?
And to be honest, quite insulting.
Oh, man. Don't piss him off.
Yeah.
He has a gun with two barrels on it. Put your lips where?
Chudnovsky, kiss my ass. Put your lips to my ass and kiss it.
So that's right.
They just let him improvise.
Yeah.
They just
exactly.
Franco.
Yeah.
Say whatever you want.
Be Franco. Go ahead and be Franco. Here's Ibbitt's prom date sent us some audio. I didn't get this from your mom. It was actually from the prom date.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, this was her.
I can't believe you got a hold of her. Jeez.
Well, this was her talking to you, I guess, after the night was over. So here's this.
I got bittersweet news for you. You're washed up. You're old. You're boring. You're not scary. You dress like shit. It's over for you, okay? That's the bitter news.
Man, that was not a good night, dude.
No,
it was rough, but I got my comeuppance. Yeah. That's why I was really surprised you were able to find that clip.
Wow.
This script was really hung up on people being called old.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It felt so wrong to me.
Also, just, 11 years ago, how old was the Seth Rogen? He was acting like he was 19, but I don't think that's right. He would have been like, hold on.
He would have been 29, 30 when he made this movie.
All right. Maybe younger than I thought. He just plays old. That was 82. He was born in 82. So what is he now? 40 now? Yeah. Something like that.
38.
You're right.
It's kind of surprising. Like, he was playing 21 in this movie, and I guess he pulled it off, but it only because he lost a bunch of weight.
Yeah.
And by the way, I couldn't see him in this movie. Like, his whole body was, I thought that was a body double every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
He lost 35 pounds for this thing. Yeah. Ton of weight. Hold on a second. Console Wars, TV series documentary he's directing. What is this about? Employees at gaming company Sega try to make a more popular device than the other ones made by their dominant rival Nintendo. Is this a documentary or a movie?
Yes, it's based on the book, and it's a documentary.
I'm so ready for that.
Yeah. It's a great read. You ever read it?
No.
Or the audiobook? The audiobook's great.
Is it? All right. Let's check it out. He was also, and he produced that Invincible series that's coming up with Stephen Yeun, J.K. Simmons, and all that.
The comic one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. See, this is where I think he should spend his time.
Yeah. Preacher's excellent. I'm about two-thirds of the way through the third season. I'm just loving it again.
Preacher. Loving it.
All right, here's who makes his coffee.
Who makes my coffee? Who makes my coffee? Will someone explain to me why on the worst day of my life my coffee tastes like shit?
Jeez. It's usually angry acting there. That's the one. Yep.
And also, also ridiculous, if your coffee is hot, you're drinking it within a minute of someone setting it down on the table.
Mm. Right.
You're going to know who that is.
Yep. I guarantee it. Mm-hmm. It's not just set there by a ninja.
But I'm going to say it's a ninja, right? That's exactly what he is.
Yeah. It is totally a ninja. Yeah, except that day it was not a ninja.
No, it was not a ninja that day. All right, here's a line that made me laugh, and I probably shouldn't because it's super dumb, but here it is.
I was born in Shanghai. You know Shanghai?
Mm. Love Japan.
Love Japan.
I did like that. Yeah.
I kind of laughed. It was all right. Here's the thing you don't want to be.
Don't be a pussy.
All right, there's that. Let's see. That was Jay Chow. Here's Seth Rogen doing this.
Whoa!
That's the most close you're going to get to his laugh.
Whoa!
Because it's getting down into his thing he does.
God, I just want him to clear his throat.
I know. He's always got something in there. Yeah. A little something brewing.
Coffee.
Are you a pervert?
Kato, are you a pervert?
I like that question. That's good. Hey, it's been a long time since we've seen Edward Furlong, so I recorded some audio of Edward Furlong. Here he is.
The thing looked like a half tank or something. I mean, there's fire coming out of the thing.
And?
Oh, yeah, he gave me this. He said that this is his town now.
I didn't even recognize him at first because he looked so haggard and
That's how he methy. Looks now in real life.
All methy.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. I was like, oh.
I wonder how he's doing now. He had serious drug problems for a while, and I think he's probably on the mend. I don't actually know that. Furlong. Let's just look him up. Edward Furlong. Here we go. Oh my gosh.
He does not take a good Wikipedia picture. I'll say that.
He's older. He's older than
he's
Seth.
Older? He's aging?
No. What? Let me finish with the sentence. He's older than Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen was born in 82. Yeah. Edward Furlong was born in 77. That blows my mind.
Because
On my birthday, by the way, Edward Furlong and I are both August 2nd.
Oh, wow.
You realized, right, that Terminator 2 is 20 years before this movie?
Yes.
Wow.
That's weird.
Terminator 2 is almost 30 years ago.
That's really weird to even think about. All right. Well, Edward Furlong, well done. Here's the, what? I don't know.
Maybe it's time to update your Wikipedia photo there, Edward Furlong.
Yeah, get going on that. But I don't know what this is. I'll just play it.
What the hell? Well, what happened to me? What's happening? What happened?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was all right. It was a few moments. It was all right. Here's another thing that made me laugh, but it's so juvenile, but it still made me laugh.
I was in a coma, dick.
I don't know. I like the tone there. All right. I don't know what he says here. Help me with this. This is a Jay Chou moment. I just cannot understand it. Here it is.
I fixed the hornet gas.
What?
The hornet gas.
Oh, the hornet.
The hornet gas.
Hornet gas.
Yeah, basically, instead of it knocking you out for 11 days, it now just knocks you out for an hour. I fixed the hornet gas.
I wrote holy gassed.
Holy gas.
I loved it so, so much that after 11 days in a coma wearing a diaper, Seth Rogen found out that it now only knocks you out for an hour. So he immediately shot Kato in the face.
Yeah. That was all right. That was pretty funny, I thought. But you can see where I got confused here.
I fixed the hornet gas.
It's just
hornet gas.
Really threw me
Here
out.
Comes the hornet gas.
Hornet gas. Okay, you guys heard this in the intro.
Wah!
I just thought that was funny. Kind of like that, too. Here's a rude thing to say to your friend.
You grew up penisless on the streets.
Jeez. Jeez. All right. This is kind of funny. Christoph Waltz.
That's scary and cool.
He did have some good lines. The whole, like, I only brought one gas mask.
So was this like 3 years after Inglourious Basterds, I think? 2009, wasn't it? Something like that. So he was in that mode of like in between prestige projects, but making money.
Taking whatever you could get.
Yeah,
right?
Taking whatever you could get. But this is between Django and Inglourious Basterds.
Oh.
And then
it's two Oscars.
What's the other? Yeah, he got an Oscar for that too, right? Didn't he get one for Django?
For both of those, for Django and Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, he's so good in those movies.
He is.
All right. Here's this.
You gotta dig this bullet out of my meat.
Now, here's the thing. I love that line, but here's the thing. I didn't record any what's her name because she was just not here.
Yeah, yeah.
She just felt absent in this movie.
Yeah. No, complete window dressing.
What a weird cast job. Because she's enough of a face where you'd go, oh, Cameron Diaz, okay, well then she'll be a significant part of your film because that's who she is. And then this, she was, you could have hired anyone.
Oh yeah.
Anybody could have done it. Think of the poor actress that didn't get that job and they gave it
to her. The bullet that they dodged.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That didn't go into their meat.
The lowest part of the movie for me is the fact that there's really only one woman in it and she's so completely left to the side. Like, I just, I don't understand how.
Yeah, the newspaper ladies, but she didn't really say much. What else? That's it. Oh, and the maid, but he just yelled at her.
Yeah,
that's it. There's no women in this movie. What are you doing there, movie?
It is kind of a Seth Rogen thing. Like, he and Evan Goldberg write movies about packs of dudes, and that's just all they can seem to do. But it's too bad, because you imagine the Kevin Smith version of this film would have had a woman, and you would think that Seth Rogen would have been looking at that. Mm. You know, like, mm-hmm. he would have at least considered what Kevin Smith had written.
I would watch a Kevin Smith directed Green Hornet. I think he'd do a good mm-hmm. job.
Yeah.
As long as it's not like a donkey sex show in it.
When he was detached from the project, he claimed to have 200 pages written, and they became a comic series. There's a Kevin Smith written Green Hornet comic series from, I don't know, 2008 or 2010 or something that came from his script treatment. And that fact kind of made me want to read those books.
Green Hornet. Let me see if I can, I'm sure you can get these. And you know you can fit the whole thing on your phone.
Yeah.
All right.
Say more.
Yeah. Say more about your new phone thing idea. All right. So here's now the time for us to exit that building and enter this one. It's the Film Sack checklist. A lot of sexual harassment. Check.
Hmm.
Fart guns. Check. And I don't drink coffee, and Kato's brew even looked good to me. Check. I don't drink coffee, and that looked really good. Right.
I found the whole thing where you use blue gas to roast the beans as you're grinding them to be absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that was pretty weird. But I love a pretty coffee always is attractive to me until I taste it, and then I hate it. I hate the taste of coffee.
Like,
but
oh yeah, that's right. Now I remember what this tastes like. Yeah, it's pure water.
Exactly. But yeah. I do like a good chai, so you could do the same thing on a chai, probably be fine. It'd be all right. Star Trek connections. There are a number of these this time. We got Monica Spruch. She played
Monica Spruch.
Spruch or Spruch. I'm not sure how you say it. It's a U-C-H. Anyway, she was a bikini model on Enterprise. She had a recurring role as Science Division crewman and worked on one of the stand-ins for actress Jolene Blaylock.
Wait, she was a bikini model in the series, or that was her career?
No, in this movie, she was a bikini model. In
Okay. I got confused.
Yeah, and during the party scenes at the beginning, I'm sure.
Right.
Or during the ejector seats. We should put those in.
Oh, right. That's possible. Probably one of those girls. Yeah. That was a nice pool.
They had speaking lines, so they'd get a little more.
That was a nice pool.
Hi, Kato. Hey.
Let's see. Here we go. Jameson Yang played City Hall reporter, and Enterprise played a medical technician in the second season episode, The Breach. And then Deborah Rombot. She was heavy metal groupie. Didn't say which number. Anyway, 2009, she was a Starfleet cadet in the film Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams reboot universe thing. Billy Mayo played a police officer in the Enterprise. He played a condiment on a sandwich called mayo. No, just kidding. He played an officer in the third season episode, Carpenter Street. All right. Our soundtrack grade today, I'd give it an S for stock. There was nothing really stood out about it. It was fine. It could have been anything. It's fine. It's okay. Twitter post, 280 characters. That's all you have to describe this film. Let's start with Randy.
Green Hornet. A couple of young dudes with money to burn or rolling all over that hide-a-bed where one of them sleeps with a different hot chick every night, just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Nice.
Bum, bum, bum.
I haven't heard that in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Hey, Brian Dunaway, your turn.
Oh, the Green Hornet, a man boy and his boy man take on crime in L.A. by becoming criminals themselves? Mind blown. Now make me some coffee.
Slave boy. And then who? Oh, and then Brian Ibbot.
And then who? The Green Hornet, 2011, gives us a look back at what superhero movies were like in 2004.
Nice. Oh, well done. Yes. You're not wrong, dude. Like, there is
pre-MCU. Phantom. Like, this is very The Phantom. And
this feels like it was made before Iron Man.
Yeah.
Or Dark Knight.
Right. It totally does. Yeah. Or Dark Knight. Yeah. Back, like, this is like, oh, let's. Schumacher does those great Batman movies. Let's try and do something like that.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Schumacher. We haven't mentioned that on the show, have we? I don't think
that's right. No, we have not.
He died. Joel Schumacher.
He died. You know, his condom, his coffin has a giant nipple on it. Just a huge nipple.
Wow.
Finally, no, that's it. Brian did do his. All right, moving on to this right here.
Real memorable, apparently.
Yeah, real super right? memorable. The alternate titles just handed to me, The Green Boar Net. That's dumb. Ah. And I couldn't think of anything else. Or that Cato movie that has a little sprinkle of the Green Hornet in it. That's the other name I almost gave it. Emails, couple of quick ones. We got one here from Adam. He sent this in to filmsack@gmail.com. He says, "Dear Sackers and Slackers, you know who you are," he says. "I'm writing most humbly to request the sacking of the 1978 Errol Morris documentary, Gates of Heaven. I'm not sure if you've ever tackled the documentary before." We have. We did that Schwarzenegger.
Pumping Iron.
Yeah. So we're not opposed. But I would consider this perfect sack material. Roger Ebert once put it on the list of the 10 best films of all time, and the release of the film caused Werner Herzog to literally eat a shoe. I suggest if... I will eat the shoe. Oh, wait, what's his voice?
I'll eat my shoe if this movie gets made.
What does he say? He says, I'm trying to do it. I can't think. I used to do a good impression of Werner Herzog, and I can't do it now. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, the from Mandalorian.
Yeah, when he says, the job of a Mandalorian. I can't do it. Anyway, I suggest if none/any of you have seen it, that is definitely worth a short 84-minute runtime. Thanks, Adam. He is also Jam Adako on Twitter. So,
oh, thank you, Adam.
Where did he say this is? I didn't say where it's streaming. We'd have to check that out. So we'll look for it, but I'd be down to check it out. Anything that made Werner Herzog eat a shoe.
Oh, yeah.
I will eat this shoe. See, I can't.
Documentary Now is streaming on Netflix. And we couldn't possibly ever sack it because we would have to describe every little detail of the fake
documentary. It's a comedy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But... I highly recommend, if you like this kind of thing, I highly recommend you watch Documentary Now. It is really interesting how the great lengths that people went to put documentaries in fake documentaries in the style of other things. Of course, that means you kind of have to have seen the other things to get it.
It's like Bill Hader, Fred Armisen, a bunch of SNL people, all that. Okay.
And so, like every fake documentary is about 15 minutes long, and it's in the style of other things, and presumably you've seen them. It's really funny.
Right, the one the Bill Hader one where they're in it's the two women that live in the weird house with it's all overgrown with weeds. I can't remember the name of the original documentary, but it's famous.
Kind of Great Gardens or something.
That's it. Gardens. Something of Gray Garden.
Yeah,
grannies. Yeah, whatever it is.
there's one
we've given you the answer. Accept it.
I'm accepting
one
it.
That parodies Nanook. There's one that parodies Hero Dreams of Sushi. It's really fun.
All right, I'm in. It's five seasons. I don't know why I haven't watched that. I meant to.
Yeah, I love those games too. So
there's one that parodies Wild Wild Country, and the name of the episode in Documentary Now is Batshit Valley.
Oh, that's amazing. That documentary is crazy. I all right, I'll catch up. This is like 5 years old now. Jeez Louise. All right, I'm in. Quick thing here from William Christopher Bryant Esquire, he says in his name.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Hi. Greetings, Scott, Brian, Brian, and Brian. He's given us three Brians. He said, I've just finished Film Sack 470, the one about Hancock. You guys scared me with Twister at 469. I thought you guys were wrapping up the podcast. Anyway, this brings me to the end of my Film Sack listening. Ooh. I see only one course of action, listening to all the episodes again. Jump into the Wayback Machine
can do it.
Of 2009 and start with Kroll on 10/30/2009. Despite the 2,400 plus other podcasts on my library, you guys are always worth a second, third, and most likely fourth listen. Long live Film Sack. Thank you, William. That's the nicest email we've ever gotten.
Yes.
That's so nice, man. Seriously.
Enjoy those first few episodes where Scott calls me Bibby to avoid confusion with two Bryans.
Oh, Lord. I mean, that was a decision we all made together, and we all thought it was the right idea, but it turned out weird.
It was totally unnecessary.
I have a request for the universe, and it would be awesome if this could somehow happen just because I requested it. Earlier this week, someone posted in the Tadpool Facebook group that they were just watching Tremors for the first time, and they were clearly not a Film Sack listener.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking, how cool would it be if I could just throw them a link to the Tremors episode of Film Sack? Listen to this after you watch that.
Yeah.
And it was hard. And so I just want to put out there, like, I wish someone would just host or link to the every single episode of Film Sack in a place where it's easy to search. I just wish so much that I could have that. And the problem is that it's so long. There's so much of it, right?
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. The feed has already been subdivided, mm-hmm. and the old episodes feed is not terribly useful, right?
Right.
I regularly open up this 100 megabyte text file and search it by hand. You know, it's just like I wish someone would just make a old episodes of Film Sack website.
Maybe. Well, I mean, we have filmsackstats.com, but it's not the same. I know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But all of it is available via. So some people are going to be listening to this going, oh, wait a minute. Mine only go about 200 episodes back. Don't worry. The entirety of the back catalog is available via a backup RSS feed that's just huge and would murder my server fees every month if I included it in the main feed. But if you want all those old episodes all the way back to crawl, it's not a problem. It's on the site, filmsack.com, so go get it.
Well, the problem is they were stored in a little flash drive that got jammed into a piece of salmon sushi.
Like you do. The great thing about that magical thumb drive was that it gave you all these custom cool messages in red text and things. Like, come on.
Yeah, that was weird.
Right, yes.
What was it copying over?
It was a little Arduino.
Yeah, that sucked. I hate stuff like that with computers and movies. One tiny final mention from Dominic, who wrote in and said, this is very short. He says, The Patriot for July 4th. It's still streaming, and I think Mel Gibson stabs a dude with an American flag. Come on now, says Dominic.
Come on.
Look, we missed it. Obviously, this is the week we would have should have done it if we were going to do that around the 4th, because The Patriot is sort of all about Independence Day and all that.
Independence.
However, it'll keep. It's like meat. It's like meat that's been salted. It'll keep.
It's like meat.
Yeah.
Everybody knows meat has a history of storing well for a long period
of
time.
He does. My memory is he does kill somebody with an American flag. Also, that movie features people's legs getting blown off with cannonballs, so that's pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a dumb dialogue movie, but a great action movie. So I'd be all in on watching The Patriot. So.
And it fits in our hot action movie summer.
Yeah, it does. We could do it next week. What are we doing next week? What's our movie?
We're going to watch and talk about Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
All right, I'm in. I'm in. Yeah,
I want that. I want that.
I want that, too. The guy that plays Edward Furlong in that one, or not Edward Furlong, the one that plays, what's his name? I think his name.
John Connor.
John Connor is the same dude that plays the dirty yellow bastard in
Nick Stahl.
Sin City?
Yeah,
Sin
Nick
City,
Stahl. Yeah. Sin City, there you go. And he's part of that curse. Everyone always said there was a John Connor curse. If you played John Connor, you'd get into drugs real hard, and both him and the other kid got into drugs real bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. And from the first movie, John Connor was a baby.
Right.
John Connor was in the womb, and the actor that played the fetus ended up getting addicted.
Yeah, no, he grew up to be Jeffrey Dahmer. There's a bad story there. So so anyway, the seed of Sean Bear, the sheen, not Sean Bean, the other Bean, Michael Bean, the seed of Michael Bean is always going to grow up to be a rat hole because he was the dad of John Connor.
I remember very specifically that Terminator 3 came out on July 2nd. I remember it. Like, it was 2003, and it came out on July 2nd, which was weird, or unusual, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And so I'm very, very excited that we're putting it in our hot action movie summer.
I'm excited, too. This is Arnold when he just started to look a little weird, not quite Arnie-like. So I'm very excited. So anyway, that'll be next week right here on FilmSack. FilmSack.com is our website. Go there. That's a place. And it has that link to the RSS feed I told you guys about. You can get that anywhere you get your podcasts. You can leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462, emails at filmsack@gmail.com, or on the website. And you can find us on Twitter at FilmSack. That'll do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Take this bullet out of my meat.
We'll see you next time. Whoops. See you next time. Shit.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.